Welcome to Red Journal Radio Show. I'm Salita, and I would like to stimulate your mind and encourage you to step out of your comfort zone with news, information, stories that will inspire and motivate you. Again, welcome to the Red Journal Radio Show.
Negro and the field Negro, back during slavery. There were two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food before he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, if the master said, "We got a good house here," the house Negro said, "Yeah, we got a good house here." Whenever the master said "we," he said "we." That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, "What's the matter, boss? We sick? We sick?" He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, "Let's run away, let's escape, let's separate," that house Negro would look at you and say, "Man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this?" That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, "I'm the only Negro out here." "I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro." And if someone comes to you right now and say, "Let's separate," you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. "What you mean separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa." That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masters. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were. Guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters.
All right, you guys, this is Red Journal Radio here on Blog Talk Radio, and it is June 28th,
And I know you guys are surprised. I think the last time I had a show was in April. I have been in the process, and I know you guys basically know I've been trying to go to school, if you've been listening. And I'm down to one semester and one class. So I've been concentrating on doing that. I've been concentrating on being an activist and just basically trying to maintain life in itself. So I haven't been on the radio, and I know I promised shows Mondays and Wednesdays, but that was not possible. And I had an opportunity tonight since I've kind of – everything's kind of starting to smooth itself out, so I'm having an opportunity to talk or to do more shows. I played that Malcolm X, the house Negro versus the field Negro. I played that because we're going to talk about something tonight that I think it's been in the news. It's been all over the place. Well, it's been here forever, and it's been that pink elephant in the room. And we're dealing with race. But you know, you guys, on Red Journal Radio, you know, before we get started into any conversation, we have to do our meditation, which we have not done yet. So before we get started on this conversation, I want to get our meditation out the way.
Close your eyes. Listen to the rhythm of your heartbeat. As you listen, try to match the steady drumming sound. Each time you breathe in, wait 3 heartbeats, then slowly breathe out. Listen for the 3 heartbeats. Do this 3 times in a row. Now feel the stress fall away from your body. As you try this exercise, imagine you hear the ocean in the distance. You hear the waves as they splash against the shores. The seagulls singing, the smell of salty air, and a small breeze that blows against your face.
All right. I hope you guys got a chance to breathe in and breathe out 3 times. And you imagine the seagulls singing and the air rushing against your, the wind blowing against your face. I'm hoping you guys were able to feel that. I did just for that little second there. Okay, now, let's get started. As you know, we usually on this show, we talk about entrepreneurship, starting your own business, how to handle it, and all that. We usually talk about that on Red Journal Radio. And I left this open simply because there are other things that we can learn about, but this is particularly something I really truly want to take time out and talk about. And please forgive me if I don't sound the happy-go-lucky me, because there is an activist inside me. There's a fire that burns inside me that I every now and then have to kind of distinguish between me being this fun-loving person and the seriousness that takes place inside me, who I am, and what I've been through in my life. So we're going to talk about racism, and we're going to talk about, we're going to deal with several points here. We're going to talk about the economic, the educational, the judicial, and the healthcare. And hopefully the information that I'm giving you, you can use it, or you can take it forward, or whatever you have to do, that you can use it. Okay, I want to start out by talking about the economics, dealing with being black in America. Let's talk about the unemployment rate. Let's talk about the unemployment rate. Let's talk about the disparities in the neighborhoods, how some neighborhoods look better than others, and what is the reason why they look better than others. We're going to try to discuss that as accurate or as close to how it's supposed to be as I can, as with the information that I have. Okay, first thing we want to talk about is the economic disparities of African Americans in America. And we're going to go into other things, but I want to talk about this first. As of May, the black unemployment rate, and I think it comes out every 30 days, but this is May 2015. The unemployment rate for African Americans is 10.2%. Okay. Now, this is not good at all. And it says in a 2012 census, it released reports that studied the history of marriage in the United States. So we're going to talk about, let's see. Let me make sure I'm on the right place. Let's see. Here we go. It says right here, it says African-American unemployment rate of May 2015 is 10.2%, but it's up from 9.6% in April. And the U.S., the overall U.S. employment rate is only 5.5. So that's the automatic red flag that there is some disparity going on in America when it comes to African-Americans. Unemployment lowers, but what does that mean for the black community? Obviously, even though the unemployment rate is lower, why is it still, it's almost six times higher for African Americans? That doesn't, I mean, that doesn't sound right. To me, it doesn't. It says, when you think about total non-farm payroll employment, it rose by 146,000 in November of 2012, and then the unemployment rate edged down from to 7.7%. That's 12 million persons. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported on December 7th, 2012, that accounting for the 2.5 million persons marginally attached to the labor force, or they looked for work, wanted, and were able to, were available for work for some time in the last 12 months, but they never looked for work in the previous 4 weeks preceding the survey. So that kind of makes that stats not really, if you know anything about statistics, it's a number game, and it's basically what it is. And it's an approximation. It's not the accurate number, but it's an approximation when you do these little formulas. Okay, neither does this count for the number of long-term, 27 weeks or more, that were unemployed, counting for 40% of the unemployment, known as the discouraged workers. That's the ones who just give up. They stop looking. It says they're currently looking for work because they're not looking for work because they believe no jobs are available for them, which is about 979,000 discouraged workers. The one race that shows a decline was the black race at 13.2%. Unemployed among other races, 6.8% whites, 10% Hispanics, and 6.4% Asians had little or no change. Now, that's amazing that even Asians are lower than whites. You know, it goes back to the old myth that Asians are smart. But obviously, everybody is having problems. We're just having the most problems. It says among men and women, men is 69.9%, women are 57.50%. Okay, that's the total labor force, which is 63%. It says total employed men are more likely to be employed than the women are. And it says total unemployment is 7.4%. And this is seasonally household, not seasonally adjusted. Okay, that's in November 2012. If you want to talk about changes in 1 year by race, let's do that. From November the 11th to November the 12th, 2012, the difference was from 2,664 to 2,343. So from November 2011 to November 2012, it has decreased when it comes to unemployment. So that is a difference. But there's a drastic difference when it comes to whites from November 2011 to 2012. There is a huge difference because it's from 8,900 to 79. So that's like 100, almost. By 1,000 difference, a little bit over 900-something difference in the numbers, if I'm not mistaken. When you look at November with Hispanics, it's from 2011 to 2012, it's a difference of 200-something. So these numbers, you know, they're fluctuating. I don't know if we should think about, you know, what is it that we could do to make that situation better. The jobs are out there. I mean, the problem is, too, is education. And we'll talk about education in a few seconds there. But the problem is there's the education, the skills, and the ideal that racism still is alive when it comes to jobs. Racism against the, what your name is, racism in how you look, the color of your skin, and it's been proven that black, light-skinned people will get jobs or get favored for a job quicker than a dark-skinned person. Why? I don't know. You know, a lot of people want to say that they're colorblind. There's no such thing as being colorblind. There's no such thing as being colorblind when it comes to how society has emulated us or made us look like. Racism is here. It's not going anywhere right now. Even though we can fight, you have to understand, we can fight all we want. But this is not just 400 years. It's longer than that. If you think about how the Indians were treated before we even came here, when you think about how they were treated prior to us coming to here. So racism has a long history. I don't see it being to the point where it's going anywhere right now. And they're going to right now dig their heels in because now people are starting to fight against what's been going on for many, many years. So now that they're fighting more, they're going to dig their heels in because it's ingrained in them to be this way. I don't want to get into the flag because the flag really has nothing to do with how people truly feel. It has nothing to do. You can take away all the flags you want, how people truly feel in their spirit and in their heart and what God can see or who their creator can see. That's who they are. And I mean, they can never take off their hoods. You still know who they are by their actions. And because we're dealing in this I want to say cesspool of racism, this is what we have to deal with. You have to put your boots on. I'm not saying pull up your bootstraps because I'm not into all of that. I'm saying put your boots on and you dig in just as hard as they dig in. I don't want to say that we'll never get equality. I might not see it in my time. Maybe eventually we will. But I see us fighting more because it's so entrenched. It's so 500 years worth of entrenchment to just 2 or 3 years of worse realizing, you know, hey, there is a difference, 50 years at the most. So think about the generations that have happened in 50 years, okay, that's created this learned, actually, mentality, because it's a learned mentality. So you think about how they've had an opportunity to build up a resistance, quote unquote, to how we feel about them feeling against us or how they feel, you know, their hatred toward us. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to make anybody love me. I am not into that. If you don't like me, that's fine. But don't mess with me if I'm not messing with you. Don't make my life miserable because you're insecure about who you are. Or don't make my life miserable because you're not comfortable, because you're afraid I'm going to take something from you. Don't even invade on my privacy. Don't try to take anything away from me that I earned. That is the problem that we're dealing with. And this is not to get off the subject about unemployment because economics has a lot to do with what I'm saying. When you talk about education, economics go together. Because without a good education, the jobs are not there. That's just point blank. Without some type of degree, the job is not there. It's not going to be there. If you're on a job that you didn't have to get education prior and you've been on the job forever and you're still at the same spot, That's the reason for that, because you didn't take initiative to go and do better when you had an opportunity. I'm not going to stay at no job 15 years and not improve on myself. That's crazy, okay? And then expect for them to promote me when I haven't done anything to get promoted. And I get upset because they don't want to promote me. So I don't want to be a person to have to worry about that. And I'm hoping you guys who are listening don't want that same situation. You don't want to be caught up in that. You want to be prepared for anything that comes your way when it comes to making decisions for jobs and education. Education is the key. And I know we push and we talk about the white man's education because we're not getting the education that we should get. Right now, we have to. Right now, this is the only way that we're going to be able to say we've progressed is if we get an education. I mean, whether it's black or white education, it's an education. It's a paper saying that you did it. But how important is that? How important is education when it comes to the to you making decisions in your life? It's very important. To what job you're going to take. If you want to start your own business, are you educated enough to do that? Do you have the experience behind your name to have that mentality to want to start a new business or do a business where you can help employ other people? I mean, those are the things we have to think about when you think about economics and education. They go hand in hand. When we look at the stats of crime, when we talk about how crime has affected how people view us as Americans, as blacks, all of that plays a big part in that, the mentality. You see, when you talk about, I think about the Stockholm Syndrome. You know how you continue to repeat something over and over and over and over and over and over again to somebody and how it, before you know it, you're saying exactly what you were taught? We have become so Stockholm syndromed that we don't even have a concept of our own. We don't really know how to think outside the box because we're afraid to because it's not what we've been programmed to think. And this is what's hurting us as a people because we're so afraid to step out on our own and do what has to be done. We don't want to feel like, you know, if I take time out to actually do this, you know, what's going to happen, you know. I'm not ready to step out. I'm not ready to let go of this leash that I've been on for so long. We're afraid to get out there and do something different, and it's killing us. We're at a point in our life where it is killing us, and it's up to us to change that. And only we can change that situation. We can't wait on anyone else. We have to do it ourselves. Now, I'm going to take a break. Small break, and I shall return.
The people's money and things. And if the gold It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Yes, we're back with Red General Radio, and I'm your host, Salita, here on Block Talk Radio. And you guys, that was a very good commercial, because I keep thinking about it's 4th of July is right around the corner, and we have to be careful on the roads out there. There's kids, there's families that's moving, traveling back and forth. So you guys, please, I'm asking you to be careful out there. Your life is not the only one that's in jeopardy. You have other people that's out there trying to enjoy their lives, and it's up to you to make sure that they do by being safe, okay? So no drinking and driving. Make sure you're wearing your seatbelt. Go have a good time, safe trip, and come home safely all in one piece. That's for all you guys out there who like to go and have a good time. Now, back to our conversation or discussion about economic and education and how both of them work together. And we've come to the conclusion that without the education, you can't be economically sound unless you have a rich uncle, auntie, your wife dies and she had money in the trust fund or whatever. That's the only way that you can not have to worry about taking care of your everyday bills, taking care of your family. And then some people just don't care and they won't do it at all, period. It doesn't have anything to do with race. That's just how some people are. That goes, well, I've seen lazy white folks just as well as I've seen lazy black folks. I've met them, I've talked to some of them, and their mentality is no different. That's because we've been forced to be together and we learn each other's habits. And the bad thing about us as African Americans, we learn the habits of our oppressor and then we use those same habits against our own. So we'll never ever, I don't want to say never ever, we will always have problems unless we get rid of that mindset on how to deal with each other economically and when it comes to education. We sometimes get our degrees and we walk around with our nose up in the air and feel like our shit don't stink, when in reality it's no different than anybody else's. And the problem with that is the ideal that when you walk around like that, thinking your education and your money is everything, when you do that and you don't give back to your community, I don't care where you come from, you don't give back, guess what? It doesn't matter really whether you give back or not, because those same people that you're not walking around with your head up in the air toward, they're the same ones who will call you a nigger in a heartbeat, call you out your name, talk about your family. Same people. It's no different. Please do not think your money gives you a pass. It doesn't. Or your status gives you a pass. It doesn't. Because when they feel like they want to talk crazy to you, they will talk crazy to you. That's just how it is, okay? They see a Negro, a nigger. They don't see a black prominent person. They see a nigger, and that's how they're going to call you. And I hate to use that word, but it's something I need to use because I want you guys to understand there is a difference. Now, let's talk about judicially. When you think judicially, as we know, we already know how many of us in prison. We already know that Louisiana has the highest rate of people in prison. We already know that the idea that we have a prison, a historical prison here, that's named after an African country called Angola. We already understand that Angola has the same slave mentality. You have the men that are on horses as overseers why the guys are out in the field. I mean, it's the same mentality. It looks like something out of a movie, okay, because it's so much how it was back in the day. It's just all men doing it right now. We look at that. We look at the judges. You look at the judge that was, what's the young guy who just, what's the young animal, because that's what I'm going to call him, an animal, sadistic animal, who killed the 9 people in church, including the senator. That little animal, Dylan, whatever his name is, that animal who killed them, you look at, he walked into church, he sat down, and after a while sat and prayed with them and did Bible study and then shot him. That was a sick, depraved person. I don't believe he did it by himself. I think it was a planned assassination. That's just my opinion when it comes to that. The idea of how they treated him opposed to how they would have treated anybody else. You think of Eric Gardner. You think of Eric Shepard. He's not dead, but he's in prison. He's in jail for something he tried to do. You think of Michael Brown. You think of these type of people, Victor White. You think about all these people that were unarmed but wind up dead. It's plenty more of them. I can't just name them off the top of my head, but it's plenty more of them. Judicially, everything that's been done is not done fairly. When you look at the history of police, the brutality, and people have to understand, history repeats itself. It literally repeats itself, and we're at a point where history is repeating itself in the things that is happening right now. Whether we want to admit it or not, it is. Now, can we change the course of time? Can we change history by us standing up? I mean, in the 50s, 60s, we stood up, we fought, we did whatever. Do you think there's a whole different atmosphere now? Yeah, because it's more technology, it's more advanced, and the idea that it might be more of them now than it was back then. And it's easy to say that because the idea that they hide behind briefcases, Book Brothers suits, Armani suits, their lawyers, their doctors, their judges, you know, the idea that the judge sat there and said he feels sorry for the family. And then several years ago, he got in trouble for using the N-word in court. So, I mean, this is something there's no way you're putting a puzzle together and you know that piece belongs there. You can't say that piece doesn't belong there because when you put it in there, it fit nice and snug. You take it out and put it back in, it's going to still fit nice and snug. So the change, there's no change. This person's been doing this forever. He should never sit in a doggone courtroom where he has to prosecute African Americans, just like these police officers are doing this killing. They shouldn't be able to be hired to another police station. I mean, out of another precinct or another area near Lulu. I can't even talk. I'm sorry, you guys. Another area. They should not be able to go and apply for other jobs in the same. Go do something else. If you want to do something, go do something else, but not where you have to make a judgment call on black folks or any other race of people other than them. They hide behind their uniforms. They hide behind their suits, and they do the things that they do. And guess what? They've made it legal. Why? Because for one thing, we don't want to get involved with the politics. Oh, I'm not a person. I'm not political. It's not about being political because political politics and the legalese both go together. They go together, regardless of how we want to look at it, they go together. And because you're not wanting to be involved, political, quote unquote, or you almost take your rights away from yourself because you have to know what's yours, what you are allowed to do, what you can do and what you can't do, that would not violate any law. So it's very important that you do take all of this and put it together and make it combined and understand economics, educational, judicial, political, all of those are all in one hat together. Once you connect all the dots with them, you'll see how important it is. If politics and education didn't go together, they wouldn't have political science as a degree. They wouldn't have any type of civics classes, economic classes. They wouldn't have any of that if politics did not have a lot to do. They go hand in hand with everything. And without a good, solid base, to stand on, the stuff that we have, the events and the issues that we're dealing with now that came from back then, we're going to continue to do it. We're going to continue to have these people who like to sell us out. We're going to continue to do that. That's just how it is. We're going to have people who are going to continue, not locally, statewide, nationwide, that's going to sell us out. They're talking about, I'm not going to get deep into it, but it's just an example of the order or law they just put in plan for the TTP, I think it's what it's called, the trade program that President Obama just voted on. They said all this other stuff was a distraction so that whenever we take trade or we do trade with these foreign countries, they have more to say so, and they don't have to abide by the rules of America trade or the way America does business. They can do it there whatever way they want to. They can come in, which means that when they get ready to, say a job comes open and they want to send it overseas, they don't have to abide by the same rules and regulations as we do. So that means that we'll have a lot of stuff imported that's not healthy, that's not safe for our families, because in the agreement, this is what was said, in the agreement it was made that they'll have more leeway than we would. And it's our trade agreement. So, you know, those are the things that we have to look at. That's why I say economics, education, and politics all work together, okay? In the judicial system, because you have your laws, you have your legislatures, you have all of these things that all work together. And it's sad in the sense that they're not equality. And I want you guys to understand this, but this is a definite thing. The more we fight against racism, the more the racist people are going to dig in. And it's a fight to the death because they want to prove that they're right. They want to prove that this is their land. They want to prove that they have a right. Just they don't want you to have a right. They just want to have a right. One guy called the narcissistic attitude that they have, that they view life, that it's all about them. When you hear about white privilege, you know, people say, oh, no, it's not, no such thing as white privilege. Yes, it is. And you can be in denial of it all you want. It's up to you. It doesn't matter because it's there. White privilege is there. Okay? Just anything they do, I've watched it in action, so I know it's true. And these people who think that, oh, it's not true, it's not really what happens, well, you're lying. Okay? I'm telling you right now, you're lying. Now, if anyone wants to call in, you can call in at 347-677-1749. That's 347-677-1749. Who is out there listening to this program? I'm just hoping that what I'm saying you guys can use in the future. You guys, I'm going to take another break. And then we'll be back, and we're going to continue this conversation about the connection between economics, education, and judicial. Then we're going to end it with some health care, okay? So I shall return. This is Red Journal Radio.
Goat milk soap is wonderful for people with dry or sensitive skin or conditions such as eczema and psoriasis. Goat milk contains alpha hydroxy acids such as lactic acid, which helps remove dead skin cells from your skin surface. This leaves new cells on the surface of your skin smoother and younger looking. Water-based soaps may use harsh chemical acids to accomplish this, frequently with skin damaging results. You can order a bar or two from Fat and Fabulous by Design LLC.biz. A proud sponsor of the Red Journal Radio Show.
It may be hard to believe, but people just like you are already saving money. FeedThePig.org makes it easy. Their simple savings plan teaches you how to start saving without going overboard. So you don't need to mooch off your friends.
You gonna finish that grape?
You mean the one in my mouth?
You don't need to stop buying the necessities.
What you're smelling is a natural musk.
Ew.
You don't need to be a medical test subject.
How do you feel?
Mostly okay. I... sometimes, though.
You don't need to get a second job as a stuntman. You just need an internet connection. Don't get left behind. Start your personal savings plan with the tips and tools on feedthepig.org. That way, you don't need to sell your soul to the devil.
$15 is the best I can do.
All right, deal.
Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
You guys, we're back, and that was a little bit of Mercy, Mercy Me by Marvin Gaye. We were talking earlier about the economic, the educational, and the judicial system and how they all work together and making this so-called America work. And when you're not part of either one of those catalysts, then you at a point where you have a choice to make, a decision whether or not you want to be part of that. Now, I think it's very important that we look at our economic situation as a whole, the ideal that we put back into this economy, $1.1 trillion, I think it's a year, and we're still living in impoverished situations. We still have ghettos. We still have slums. We still have high unemployment, which we talked about earlier. So you wonder why, you wonder how is this so on, I mean, it's not, it doesn't even add up. We spend $1.1 trillion. We have the highest unemployment rate. So what is happening here? What is fueling this fire? Why is it that we are at a point where we're putting more in the system, in the economy, than we're even getting out? We're not, I'm not going to say we don't open businesses, because that's not true, but I know we're at a disadvantage when we do it,
We have one person for sure that I know. When you talk about minorities and the ideal that we're powerless to a certain extent when it comes to making decisions and opening businesses economically, again, economic education and the way the laws are judicially, when you look at who is our worst competitor or the best competitor, you have to look at the white woman. When you look at minorities, we're supposed to be the ones who's supposed to be getting the extra benefits according to the federal government. If you have certainness, if you qualify, if you fall into this category, you should be able to get this or this or this, this benefit or this service or whatever resource or whatever. And what happens is the white woman, she's considered a minority. So she falls into that category with us. So, again, if there's any way that we can be stifled when a situation happens when it comes to opening your business and stuff, we have to look at it. The white woman has more power. I mean, she falls into that category. And does that hurt us? Yeah, it hurts us to a certain extent. But we've got to make that. We got to make it better for ourselves. We have to find other ways. We have issues, and I was talking about this on another show that I do on our local channel. It's called Black News Weekly Radio, and Black is the Black Louisiana Associates of Consciousness Concerns. And we were talking about that, and one point I did make is the ideal that we don't trust each other enough to come together. No matter how much white folks hate each other, they're going to come together and make stuff happen. That's just how it is. That's what they've learned to do as families. That's what they've learned to do as business partners, is no matter what, how much they hate each other on the outside, but when it comes up to go do anything against us or any other minority, they're going to come together on it. And that's where we have issues at, because we don't trust each other. And I'm going to say this, and it's going to be an example of what we were just talking about, trusting. I, as you know, Fat and Fabulous by Design is our company, and I needed some labels, and I ordered them from this young lady. Like I said, I'm always, if I can support a black business, I don't mind supporting a black business. And now I've already done business with her prior to that. And that means I've spent money with her, my hard-earned money with her. And when it came to the labels, I don't have my labels, but she's been paid already. So I'm going to chalk that up. I know I could go and fight and argue and be mad and not do business with her, but she does great work. I mean, she does. I can't take that away from her. But she fell when it came to me. She did not do when it came to this particular project that I requested and paid for. I didn't get the service back. And I basically very nicely let her know, if we call ourselves businesses, we have to do what's right with our customers. Our customers are not priority. No matter what happens, we have to be there and make sure that and if they don't get their product, you don't have the person continue to call you. You call that person, you let them know what happened and why their product or their service is not being done yet. So especially if they've already paid their money. To me, that's very important. If they hadn't paid the money yet, that's a different story. Well, we can change things. But if the money has already been exchanged, the invoice has already been written, the proof is in the pudding where the money went, then you should provide that service. Get someone else. If you can't do it, get somebody else to provide that service for that customer. That's what you do. So to this day, I still haven't gotten my labels, and I'm telling you this because that's an example of why we have issues when it comes to economics and business transactions. I'm still waiting on my situation, okay? So saying that, I'm still waiting for a product that I purchased from this business, this black business. So I don't want that to continue to happen because I want to have trust in my people. I want to be able to know that the people that I deal with will whatever it is that I need, I'll be able to get it once I paid my money. I can understand that. And she's not the only one I've done business with. And so far, she's the only one who's actually done me like this. So I'm just thinking it's a hiccup, and we need to move on to something different. So when you think about the education, the economics, and the judicial, it all works together, and it's all a system that is set up to not keep us from progressing, but putting things in our way to make sure, like stumbling blocks. I talk about business a lot because it's a very important thing to me, to be able to sustain ourselves. That's my whole mindset. If I can give you an opportunity to sustain yourself, then I'm going to do all I can to make sure that you are being sustained. That's my job. Once you be sustained, once you become sustained, then I can move on to the next appointment or project that I want to do or person that I want to help. We don't want to do that, and it's hurting us. It's hurting us economically. It's hurting us educational-wise because we don't want to hear what anyone else says. You know, we have to, I keep going back to the Stockholm Syndrome. I keep talking about how important for us to come together as a people, how important it is us to listen to others who have things to tell us that's going to help us. We've got to come to a point where we've got to believe in that. And when we stop believing in that, it hurts us. When we don't want to listen and we want to be that, quote, unquote, house Negro, we want to be part of that, that hurts us. It really does. It hurts the ones who wants to be, who wants to help or who wants to give back, but we have these people that's standing in our way. And it's either us or them. So who are you going to take care of? You're going to take care of them or us? You're going to come and be with us, or you're going to, you know, make yourself, you know, we want to be so integrated, but this integration is not working. It's not working, you guys, because if it worked, we would be further in life. We wouldn't have the economic downsides that we have. We wouldn't have an education that's crappy. We wouldn't have an economic system that does not work in our favor. So what do? Do we separate and start to work on ourselves, or is it too late? I think why we, quote unquote, integrated, maybe this is an opportunity that we can start working on changing some things up. I really do. I think it's a way that we can start changing things and making things better while we have an opportunity. And the only way we can do that is we have to be able to trust each other. Now, without us being able to trust each other, it's hurting us. It really is hurting us. And I look at it in a way that we're either going to try to make things different and better, or we're going to continue to do the things that are not productive for us as a people. You think about the recent deaths. You think about, has any of this changed how things are? No, not really. I mean, we can't be. I wish we would stop having this shock syndrome that happens every time something terrible happens to us. This has been going on for years. This is not the first time. This has been going on for years. We've been hurt. We've been put in places. We've been doing things that were not right for us. This has been put in place. So what do? We have to break the chains. How do we do that? Education. Educate ourselves. Not only just educate ourselves in a normal way, we need to educate ourselves economically. We need to know how to have a checking account, a savings account. We have to know about stocks and bonds, you know. We don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. We'd rather go spend every penny we got because it makes us feel important. We've got to stop that. We've got to come to a point in our lives where we have families. And this generation of families, black families that struggled hard, that went through so much so that their children could have something and then their children could have something. But you know what? We're at a point now. I'm not going to put down this generation, but this generation, I'm just amazed. I'm not only just talking about the younger people. I'm talking about the older people, how their mindset is. It's just amazing how they really, really think. And it just mind boggles me how we do not want to admit that the system was set up this way. Now, I don't know if I've talked about this book before, but we have to look at how if we do not educate ourselves and know what's going on and keeping up with the trends and keeping up with the business world and keeping up with what's going on, do you know that the first question we need to ask ourselves, who needs the Negro? Because, see, we're not being productive. Not to say that we need to be productive in their society. We need to be productive in our own society, and a lot of us are not. So when are we going to pick up the shovel, pick up the broom, and start making a change? It's up to us, and only we can do it. How can we look at and understand that this is designed this way? Now, I want to just take some time out while we're talking about this and make this and kind of read to you what I'm just like amazed when it comes to racism. And it says definitely that racism, divine, natural, and judicial. Wow. It says myths of racism formulated over the past 450 years are the rationales white America creates to enhance the racist tradition. To sanctify its racist heritage, white America exhorts justification that change from time to time in light of changing conditions. Myths of racism come forth as maxims ordaining the treatment according a particularly despised people, talking about us. Racism not only prescribes social relations among diverse people, but it also carries with it justifications for its necessity. White America may readily admit to its racism without any qualms. It suffers from no misgivings when adhering even to the most extreme advocacy, namely genocide. In disposing of an unwanted race, whites avoid pangs of compunction simply by confessing to the submission of racism in accord with the absolutes in the myths of racism. If there is any analogy in America's racial history relative to the Negro, it is with the Indian, not the immigrant, as is the case for all analogies. And the comparison is not perfect, but the contrast is plausible and, more important, revealing of what the future holds for the American Negro. For with the arrival of new technology, the pattern of racism and its complementary myths now engulfs the Negro, just as they foreclosed upon the Indian of yesterday. And for identical reasons, both are racially undesired and economically worthless. Wow. Wow. And I'm saying wow because, I mean, think about it. We're disposable. In other words, we're not, what do we do with us? They don't need us. We become a burden to them. They gave the Indians a reservation where they're killing each other, they're raping each other, and I'm not just saying this, and they have a high alcoholism rate. Okay? Even though a lot of them they're economically sound because of the casinos, but this is what they've done. They even gave them somewhere to stay. They put them on reservations, the ones that they didn't kill off. Okay? So being part of America, I mean, you think about it. I wonder, and I don't want to say I'm afraid because I don't think my danger button works too well. I mean, my alert button doesn't work too well. I just think there's a need for us to understand how important it is for things to change for us, and that we are the change. We have to be the change. Now, we're going to take a break again because I want to have, and I want to talk about, a friend of mine wrote this book, or associate of mine wrote this book about solitary action, and it's a fight against obesity and healthcare consequences. And she's basically talking about how healthcare has impacted the African American society or the generation, and how us eating all this processed food and not exercising and taking care of our bodies, how it has actually hurt us opposed to helping us. But we're going to take a break and we shall return, okay?
It may be hard to believe, but people just like you are already saving money. FeedThePig.org makes it easy. Their simple savings plan teaches you how to start saving without going overboard, so you don't need to mooch off your friends.
You gonna finish that grape?
You mean the one in my mouth?
You don't need to stop buying the necessities.
What you're smelling is a natural musk.
Ew.
You don't need to be a medical test subject.
How do you feel?
Mostly okay. I... Sometimes, though.
You don't need to get a second job as a stuntman.
We need a new stuntman! Let's break for lunch.
You just need an internet connection. Don't get left behind. Start your personal savings plan with the tips and tools on feedthepig.org. That way, you don't need to sell your soul to the devil.
$15 is the best I can do.
All right, deal.
Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Last night, we put on an epic light show.
Yeah, we did.
The crowd loved us. We love the crowd.
Wait, but there were only four people out there.
Yeah, but did you see their four faces? All eight of their eyes lit up brighter than ours. And we're fireflies.
Yeah, we are.
Hey, that one girl, she looked like she'd never seen glow-in-the-dark like this before, and we invented glow-in-the-dark.
Yeah, we invented it.
And we're going to be out here every night rocking out our light show at a forest near you.
Woo-hoo!
So come check us out.
Check us out.
And bring your kid, all ages show. Oh, but don't bring any of those glass jars, because they make us kind of nervous.
Yeah, and I'm super claustrophobic.
Whether you're rocking their world or they're rocking yours, some memories never fade. Come alive with the forest. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a forest near you. And discover other cool things to do when you go, like fishing, biking, or even camping. Visit discovertheforest.org.
See you later!
Yeah, see you soon!
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Fabulous by Design Bath and Body Products has something for everyone. Did you know that oatmeal soap is a great skin barrier? It exfoliates, it has pH balance, prevents itching, and moisturizes. This is just one of the wonderful products Fabulous by Design offers. For more information, visit our website, Fat and Fabulous by Design, LLC.biz. That's PhatandPhabulous by Design, LLC.biz. This is another proud sponsor of the Red Journal Radio Show. All right, we are back with more Red Journal Radio, and we were just talking about the racism, economic, education, judicial, and how important that we become working together to get out of our situation that we're in now. Before we go any further, I want to talk about the young lady. Her name was Bree. I can't get her whole name in my mind right now. I'm sorry. I should have had it in front of me. She's the one who climbed up on the pole and pulled down the Confederate flag. You know, I'm sorry, I agree with her, but like I said earlier, the flag is not the problem.
We have a, it's much deeper than the flag, but I'm very much so behind her in that. And she did. From what I'm hearing, the latest news is she's already out of jail. I'm quite sure she has to go back for her arraignment or whatever. I mean, her court date or whatever. But right now, she's out on $3,000 bond. Is what I've heard. We have another young lady. Her name is, and I'm saying lady because I'm listening to the women who are standing up. And it's not the men; it's the women. And not to put anybody down or whatever. I'm just basically saying that it seems like the women are the ones who are stepping up doing these things. She calls herself hashtag angry black woman. What is her name? Sumitria Collins, I think her name is. Sumitria Collins. And it's amazing. She used to be a stripper. And she's going hard, and she's going hard in on the churches. She's going hard in on the religious part of this issue because religion has a lot to do with what's going on, and we can be in denial of it all we want, but it does. Christianity has a lot to do with what's going on, and it's because you think about the Klan who sits back and they hide behind their religion to do what they're doing. And to wow. I mean, it's so much in the news, there's so much going on that, you know, they have to keep you distracted because if you find yourself really, 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 really into what's going on, if you pay attention deep, real, real deep and very, very attentive to what they're doing, you'll see the undercover situation that they're into or that they're trying to do. I'm sorry. My mind just went blank just that quick there. And I wanted to get that out because I want you to understand all of this connects. Okay. Okay. Let's talk about wow. I know you guys have heard of Dr. Frances Cress Westling. I'm quite sure you've heard of her before. She's the one who wrote the ISIS papers. And she wrote a book called Cress Theory of Color Confrontation that talks about white supremacy, the psychology of white supremacy. Very interesting book. She basically tells us to, when you look at history, how things are, how things work out, how people are seeing us as African Americans and where all this deep hatred comes from. She's the person that comes up with that, who actually wrote the book on it, if I want to say it like that. Okay, it says that this is how she views the imprisonment, because again, we're talking judicial. And this has, I'm going to get to the health care, but this is the judicial part of it. It says, Dr. Watson views the imprisonment of black men as the epitome of white supremacy manifestation. Black males are feminized in jail. They are given orders by men to whom they must submit. They wait passively to be fed 3 meals a day by men, and finally they have sexual intercourse with men. Prolonged submission to the domination strips the black male of the instinct to be a guardian of black civilization, protecting the family even at the consequence of death. In her writing, she asks that black women preserve black manhood from becoming the female buffoon, transvestite, and homosexual that modern America would make him out to be. Now, as you know, federal Supreme Court passed a law saying that now all gays can get married. From what I'm hearing, Louisiana is the only one who's the state of Louisiana is the only one holding out. Everybody basically, it's a federal law, but states can argue whether or not they want to do it. But from what I'm hearing is that they're going to start persecuting people who refuse to either serve them, persecute them if they don't want to marry them, which
I don't understand that, but okay. And I have to stay off that subject. I really do, but I just wanted to read that to you so you know why it's hard for the African American man to this day. What are some of the problems and the issues that they deal with? It says the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution outlaws slavery and involuntary servitude except as punishment for a crime, incarceration. It says the United States has the highest documented incarceration rate in the world, and black Americans, who constitute 14.1% of the population, comprise 31% of the incarcerated. That is crazy. We have 14.1% of the population, but we have more than 30% of us are incarcerated. America has secured the future of the prison industry by legislating predetermined sentencing terms and establishing mandatory minimum sentences which remove the human element from sentencing, such as the prerogative of a judge to consider the mitigation or extenuating circumstances of a crime to determine the appropriate legal action. Proof of the actions taken to assure occupied incarceration institutions evidence of the fact that life prisons sentences increased by 83% between 1992 and 2003, while violent crimes fell in the same period. Here we go with statistics, and here we go with facts. The idea that the crime rate has dropped, but life sentences have increased. It says in 2010, national statistics show that black American males were incarcerated 650%, which is 6.41 times more often than their white counterparts. When prisons are privatized, who owns the prisoners? Again, we have to see economic, education, and judicial all work together. Let me say that again. When it comes to racism, economics, education, and the judicial works hand in hand, okay? It is a chain. It says the black community cannot afford to be reliant on goodwill of the government and financially federally funded agencies to institute a remedy for the obesity epidemic that is decimating black Americans. It is the same public health service and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, scientists whose history we know, who have been the primary healthcare officials addressing the obesity epidemic in America over the last 60 years. So, if they're the ones in charge, think about that. If they're the ones in charge, what do you think? It says the black American conundrum. African slaves descended did not immigrate to the United States. They were assimilated into America's established in 1776. Enslavement of Africans was an extension of the teachings of eugenics, which declares superiority of Anglo-Saxon groups who strive to control genetic features of human populations through selective breeding and sterilization. Now, you have to understand they have breeders in slavery, and they eventually, when we did whatever we had to do, you had the baby, they took the baby, they put them, you know, they did what they had to do with them. And then we turned around, and when it was too many of us, when we were free, and we started populating, we populated all over the place, they needed to stop it. Wow, it was too many of them. We don't even have any place to put them. So now we have to find a place to put them. We don't have housing. We don't have food. We kicked them out, and they have no trade. They have no education. They have nothing. They're not supposed to know how to read. So, you know, you think about all the circumstances when it was time for us to be free. They were not prepared for us to be free. Okay? So they had to find a way to say, you know what? We got a whole bunch of dumb black folks. We need to get rid of them. It wasn't that we weren't dumb. We were far from dumb. We were dumb when they had no use for us anymore. That's when we became dumb, okay, when they used us up. Then we became dumb and ignorant, okay? Not prior to that, because we were smart enough to clean their houses. We were smart enough to build stuff for them. We were smart enough to maintain everything. But when we became free, we became dumb, okay? So you keep that in mind when you view how they see us, how they still to this day see us, because racism is generational, okay? Racism is generational. It don't just pop in and out. It's generational. Somebody somewhere right now is sitting down with their grandchildren and telling them about black folks in a negative way. I'm just telling you, okay? Now, it says, the Africa to North America dysphoria began in the mid-16th century and continued into the 19th century. During the Atlantic slave trade, 12 million people from Africa were transferred to the West Hemisphere as chattel slaves. This is where people are property brought and sold, forced to work, held against their will from time to time, from time of their capture, purchased in birth, and deprived of the right to leave, to refuse to work, rear their own young, and demand compensation. So all these things we could not do as chattel slaves, okay? When you think about that, you think about how this all took place and how important for us to understand our history. You know, I don't want to hear about slavery. It happened, it's done with. Why are we still talking about it? Because it still exists. That's why we still talk about it and why it's so important that we continue to talk about it. Now, you guys, we have to take a break because I'm only doing 90 minutes today. So what I want to do is I want to take another break and get our last song in because you know I love my songs before we settle down. So when we come back, we're going to continue to talk about the healthcare and how it all connects and how we have to look at how important it is for us to exercise, that's including me, how important it is for us to grow our own food, which I think is great. So I'm going to return with Red Journal Radio.
If you get anything out of life, you got to put up with the trolls and trash. Now listen. Ooh. Pushing mama a little bit too far. I don't think you know. I don't think you know how blessed you are. And your friend Annie Mae tell you all she sees. Yes, she thought she was trying to get close to me. Hang it all. Think it over, girl. Think it over, girl. That's the way you feel about me. And if I can weep for you, I'll
be. All right, we're back. Just wanted to get a little bit of that in. Now, let's continue to talk about the health care and how important it is for us to grow our own foods, how important it is for us to understand that there is a disparity in health care. We are so, the numbers are so disproportionate to how we're being taken care of in the healthcare system, because to me, there's not enough black doctors, there are not enough black hospitals, there's not enough people paying attention to us and who we are. They want to say that we're all from the same, we all have the same type of body. I don't see that. I mean, I just don't see that. Not to say that it's not true, but I see that I think I would be more comfortable if I had a black doctor. I would be. I would be more comfortable if I had a black pediatrician. I'd be more comfortable if I had a if I had everything that looks like me telling me what's wrong with me. I don't know why, but you know, not to say that we don't have black doctors. We do. We just have to understand that we're not having that in the medical field, in the healthcare. We know that lots of times Not to say all whites don't see us as just patients, but a lot of them really don't want to deal with us, and they really don't. If they could get, I mean, move on to somebody else, they would do that. Healthcare is not like it used to be. It's not that close, intimate relationship you have with your doctors anymore. It's about making sure the bills are paid. I might tap you on the arm or touch you, hear your heart, and then, hey, let me give you some medicine and get you out of my office as fast as I can. It has changed down through the years, and in the process of it changing, it's hurting us. Real quick, I just want to get this out before we go. It says, in 1946, Center for Disease Control Prevention has monitored challenges in the nation's health gap between rich and poor United States residents for illness, injury, risk behaviors. Use of preventive health services, exposure to environmental hazards and premature death. Numerous health disparities along racial, ethnic, economic, and socioeconomic lines have been documented, which are correctable. These things can all be corrected, which is crazy. Rates of preventable hospitalization increase as incomes decrease. There are also large racial, ethnic disparities in preventable hospitalization, with Black Americans experiencing a rate more than double that of whites. Data from the Agency of Healthcare Research and Quality indicates that eliminating these disparities would prevent approximately 1 million hospitalizations and save $6.7 billion in healthcare costs each year. But because of the disparities that we go through, that is not possible. It's possible, but it hasn't happened. Historically, women have always been at the forefront of struggle for human rights. They have initiated and instigated, forced and challenged and confront social issues worldwide. Women are the gatekeepers of culture, and therefore, today, women must take up the battle armature against obesity and lead the way into better health. Now, it is such times as these that the strong men and women must rally of the front lines and disarm the surge of obesity overtaking America. Women are important producers and reproducers of family life and are the first health care givers to their children and family members. In society woven from resilient threads of sexism, racism, and class exploitation, strong women occupy a particular discursive and material space. Her specific point has been to take on the burdens and complete the task that enables civilization to continue. Okay, so we're putting it the brunt in the back of the woman. The women have fought for everything now. Better health care, better lives for their families. I mean, that's what they had to do, and this is what they did. So you think it should be... Do you think it should be a change in how they see us? Guys, we're running out of time. I want to continue this, which I will. Definitely have to come back with another show. I want to thank you guys for listening in to Red Journal Radio. Sorry anybody if I offended anybody today. This is what I talk about. And I want to get more involved into this. I mean, I want to go deeper into this, and we will on the next show. I'm going to make sure I schedule it. I want to again say thank you guys again for listening into Red Journal Radio, and we are out. Bye-bye.